close of November, Holmes and I sat together in silence all evening. He engaged with a powerful lens, deciphering the remains of an original inscription upon a palimpsest. I, deep in a recent treatise upon surgery. Outside, the wind howled down Baker Street, while the rain beat fiercely against the windows. It was strange there, in the very depths of the town, with 10 miles of men's handiwork on every side of us, to feel the iron grip of nature, and to be conscious that to the huge elemental forces, all London was no more than the molehills that dot the fields. I walked to the window and looked out on the deserted street. The occasional lamps gleamed on the expanse of muddy road and shining pavement. A single cab was splashing its way from the Oxford Street end. "Well, Watson, it's as well we have not to turn out tonight." Holmes lay aside his lens and rolled up the palimpsest. "I've done enough for one sitting. It's trying for the eyes. As far as I can make out, it's nothing more exciting than the account of an abbey dating from the second half of the 15th century. Hello, hello, hello. What's this?" Amid the droning of the wind, there had come the stamping of a horse's hoofs, and the long grind of a wheel as it rasped against the curb. The cab that I had seen pulled up at our front door. "What can he want?" I muttered as a man stepped out of it.
"Want? He wants us. And we, my poor Watson, want overcoats and cravats and galoshes, and every aid that man has ever invented to fight the weather. Oh, wait a bit, though. That's the cab off again. There's hope yet. He'd have kept it if he wanted us to come. Run down, my dear fellow, and open the door, for all virtuous folk have been long in bed."
When the light of the hall lamp fell upon our midnight visitor, I had no difficulty in recognizing him. It was young Stanley Hopkins, a promising detective, in whose career Holmes had several times shown a very practical interest.
"Is he in?"
"Come up, my dear sir. I hope you have no designs upon us on such a night as this."
The detective mounted the stairs, and our lamps gleamed upon his shining waterproof. I helped him out of it, while Holmes knocked a blaze out of the logs in the grate.
"Now, my dear Hopkins, draw up and warm your toes. Here's a cigar, and the doctor has a prescription containing hot water and a lemon, which is very good medicine on a night like this. It must be something important that has brought you out in such a horrible gale."
"It is indeed, Mr. Holmes. I've had a bustling afternoon, I promise you. Did you see anything of the Yoxley case in the latest edition?"
"I've seen nothing later than the 15th century today."
"Well, it was only a paragraph, and all wrong at that, so you haven't missed anything. I haven't let the grass grow under me feet. It's down in Kent, 7 miles from Chatham, and 3 from the railway line. I was wired for at 3:15, reached Yoxley Old Place at 5, conducted my investigation, was back at Charing Cross by the last train, and straight to you by cab.
Which means, I suppose, that you're not quite cleared about your case."
"It means that I can make neither head nor tail of it. As far as I can see, it's just as tangled a business as ever I handled. And yet at first it seemed so simple I couldn't go wrong.
There's no motive, Mr. Holmes. That's what bothers me. I can't put my hand on a motive. Here's a man dead, there's no denying that. But as far as I can see, no reason on earth why anyone should wish him any harm."
Holmes lit his cigar and leaned back in his chair.
"Let us hear about it. Well, I've got me facts pretty clear. All I want now is to know what they all mean. The story, as far as I can make it out, is like this. Some years ago, this country house, Yoxley Old Place, was taken by an elderly man who gave the name of Professor Coram. He was an invalid keeping to his bed half the time, and the other half hobbling round the house with a stick, or being pushed about the grounds by the gardener in a bath chair. He was well liked by the few neighbours who called upon him, and he has the reputation down there of being a very learned man. His household used to consist of an elderly housekeeper, a Mrs. Marker, and of a maid, Susan Tarleton. These have both been with him since his arrival, and they seem to be women of excellent character. The professor is writing a learned book, and he found it necessary, about a year ago, to engage a secretary. The first two that he tried were not successes, but the third, Mr. Willoughby Smith, a very young man straight from the university, seems to have been just what his employer wanted. His work consisted of writing all the morning to the professor's dictation, and he usually spent the evenings in hunting up references and passages which bore upon the next day's work. This Willoughby Smith has nothing against him, either as a boy at Uppingham or a young man at Cambridge. I have seen his testimonials, and from the first he was a decent, quiet, hard-working fellow, with no weak spots in him at all. And yet this is the lad that has met his death this morning in the professor's study under circumstances which can only point to murder."
The wind howled and screamed at the windows. Holmes and I drew closer to the fire, while the young inspector slowly and point by point developed his narrative.
"If you were to search all England,